Blog Talk Radio.
Goodbye, Joe. Me gotta go. Me, oh my, oh. Me gotta go. Pull the P-Row down the bayou. My Yvonne, the sweetest one. Me, oh my, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou. Jambalaya, crawfish pie, and a filet gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see Mama Shazamio. Take your tub, fill fruit jar, and be gay.
And every moment of every day, your 17 trillion cells are dying and being regenerated again. Although it's a process, some cells have a longer life than other cells. At every moment of every day, and with every breath you take, with every thought you think, with every piece of food you put in your mouth, you are making a decision as to how these cells regenerate themselves, whether you know it or you don't. And so these are some of the conversations and the topics we like to cover on this show. This is the Eating for Meaning show, and I'm your host, Dr. Millie Lytle. I am a naturopathic doctor. I'm a certified nutrition specialist, and I have my master's in public health. And I want to welcome you all for joining me on this very special episode. On this show, Eating for Meaning, we talk about just that, how we eat and improve our health and well-being, and how we improve the health and well-being of those around us, and even for future generations, to prevent and treat chronic disease and feel our best. But we also touch on occasionally other topics, like we will today. So today I'm very excited. This is the second attempt that I have, and the second fortunate attempt I have to be interviewing my very special guest, Tom Palladino. Tom Palladino is a scalar energy practitioner and researcher, and we will learn his story, methods, and why he is so confident his practices are helping people treat all sorts of health problems, even infectious disease. And so Tom Palladino's research and work with scalar energy began during his undergraduate years. He was inspired by various scientists such as Hieronymus or Moray, and especially Nikola Tesla, as to the existence of an energy that is not of the electromagnetic spectrum. With this inspiration, he pursued a course of independent study in order to better understand and subsequently harness scalar energy. And along with all of you, I am too going to be learning what exactly is scalar energy and how does Tom Palladino harness it to help you and me, and I trust himself as well. So welcome to the program, Tom. How are you today?
I am very well. Thank you, Doctor, for the invite. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for being on, and I'm excited to hear all about this new form of research and energy work that I've really never heard of before. And so can you tell us a little bit about, maybe first of all, scalar energy and what brought you to work with it?
Sure. Well, first of all, everybody is an expert in scalar energy. It's all around us. The sun produces scalar energy. The stars produce it. Now, those are the points of origin. So scalar energy is all around us. It's, some people call it chi or prana. Some people call it universal life force energy. All of you are very familiar with the energy. We just haven't come to accept that there's a second energy in the universe. Well, as you said, I was inspired initially as a youngster by various scientists, Nikola Tesla and subsequently Galen Hieronymus. Those were the two scalar energy pioneers that really excited me, that really served to push me to learn more about this promising energy. It's very simple. There's two energies in the universe. Everybody accepts electricity and magnetism. The electromagnetic spectrum is valid. But there's another type of energy, and we just haven't tapped into it. That other type of energy is scalar energy, and we'll explore just how common, it's omnipresent, as a matter of fact, how common scalar energy is, and how we just now have to define the terms to accept it, and then eventually we'll use this energy to the great betterment of mankind.
Okay, yeah, so this excites me but also baffles me, because I guess I understand the concept of chi and prana and even source energy, and some people would say that that is the source energy is God or the universal energy, and still I have a hard time grasping what scalar energy is, especially when we compare it to people like Nikola Tesla, who I think of as an electrical engineer. Wasn't he developing light?
That's right. Yes, well, let's define our terms, and I'll show just how easy this is. Scalar energy is the first energy, the initial energy of the universe. So we look to the source of all energy. It's the stars. Where else would it be? The stars produce light. Our sun is a star. So the point of origin for all light, all energy, is the sun of our solar system, the stars of the universe. Well, all energy initiates as scalar energy. Well, what is scalar energy? It's a double helix. It looks like our DNA. If you can imagine two corkscrews placed side by side, those two corkscrews were intertwined, that's a double helix. So all energy originates as scalar energy. And then in some environments, scalar energy will degrade into electricity and magnetism. So in synopsis, scalar energy is the first, the initial energy of the universe, and in some environments, scalar energy degrades into electricity and magnetism. Well, if I had my druthers, I would want to live in a scalar energy world, not an electromagnetic world. Well, that's what I'm trying to achieve, frankly, Doctor. I want the world to see that there's a better energy than that of electricity. The better, the more versatile energy is scalar energy. Now, you mentioned Nikola Tesla. Yes, Tesla gave us AC current. Without Nikola Tesla, I don't think society would have advanced to the point it has. Nikola Tesla was the father of AC electricity. But it's not really clearly defined and understood. Tesla was also a scalar energy inventor. The latter part of Tesla's life was devoted almost exclusively to scalar energy. To that point, Tesla, at the turn of the century, built a gigantic tower in Long Island called Wardenclyffe Tower. Well, that tower was designated to transmit scalar energy around the world. That was his first attempt at trying to develop a commercial enterprise that would broadcast scalar energy. Tesla started with electricity, but he finished with scalar energy, so to speak. And sometime during his life, Tesla himself realized the merit of scalar energy, and for the most part, the latter part of his life, he almost abandoned electrical energy research. He was working almost exclusively with scalar energy the latter part of his life. Why? It's a much better energy. First of all, it's infinite in supply. Secondly, scalar energy does not experience entropy. It does not weaken over time or distance. It's a clean energy. It's an energy that does not harm the body. It has no pollution to it. It's non-physical, obviously. So Tesla saw the great merit behind scalar energy, and so do I, and I'm sure many of you will after we speak about it this hour. Scalar energy is tops. There's nothing like it.
Okay, and so this does generate a few questions in my mind. So Einstein comes to mind, his theory of relativity, and I wonder what the relationship is between his statement that energy can neither be created nor destroyed when it comes to scalar energy. Sure. So can we start with that question? Is that a fair question?
Sure. Of course. I want you to ask those questions. Einstein was understood really the electromagnetic spectrum. I think one of the things that obstacles that Einstein faced is he never could quite understand scalar energy. Most of Einstein's theories were predicated upon the electromagnetic spectrum, and many of his theories reflect that. Tesla took it to the next level. Tesla understood that there's two energies. Scalar energy was the other energy that mankind has just not recognized. So was Einstein correct? Well, in some cases, yes, he was. Energy is not to be annihilated. You cannot annihilate energy. It's always there. Scalar energy is omnipresent, as I mentioned, it cannot be, you cannot remove it from the universe. It cannot in any way be annihilated. Tesla understood that, I think, to a greater extent than that of Albert Einstein. Why? Because Albert Einstein only looked at the world, the universe, through the prism of the electromagnetic spectrum. You need two prisms to look through and understand the universe. Yes, electromagnetic energy does have characteristics and properties that we recognize, but scalar energy is the other prism that you have to look through the universe through. Now, many people say that what Einstein really never could grasp was the concept of ether, whereas Nikola Tesla always attended to the concept of ether. Tesla mentioned that ether is indeed present in the universe. It is, if you will, that fundament that allows for the transmission of all light, of all energy. Well, some people say that in substitution of ether, Albert Einstein used the concept of space. Now, I'm not trying to play a word game here, but it's crucial to understand that ether does exist, that ether is the medium for all transmission of energy, and that I believe Tesla was far advanced in that understanding. In many ways, that served as an obstacle to Albert Einstein. So I'll go on record by saying I believe Tesla is, again, tops. He's the premier scientist that I don't know of anybody who can compare to him.
Okay, and interestingly enough, these two guys lived at the same time, and in fact, Tesla was born before Albert Einstein, so it's not like Albert Einstein preceded Tesla. I quickly Googled
yes.
that.
Yes.
And so, okay, and so how can scalar energy be measured?
Scalar energy can be measured by its effects. I do not per se have a meter yet. I have not been able to meter it to control it to that extent. I do have instruments in which I can broadcast it, but that's a good point. There are electrical meters. We have not, at least I have not, developed a scalar energy meter. Why? It's, again, it's a different spectrum. It's a different dimension. How do I know I'm working with scalar energy? By the characteristics. For instance, in my laboratory, I routinely am able to illuminate light bulbs that are not plugged in, meaning I can hold a light bulb in my hand, and the scalar energy force field in my laboratory will illuminate that light bulb. Hence, I have a local scalar energy environment. Obviously, you can't do that. You simply can't walk around your laboratory, your house, or a school with a light bulb in your hand, and the light bulb will illuminate. So how do I know I'm working with scalar energy? By the characteristics, by what I observe in my laboratory. It's a local scalar energy environment. And then secondly, by the effects. I treat people with scalar energy, and I have incredible results, sensational results when I'm working with scalar energy.
So, okay, so can we back up and then understand where you as a scientist and a practitioner come from? So you mentioned you had these various scientists who inspired you, but then how did you come to learn and practice and, this field?
Sure. It really has been a lifelong endeavor, and there's really two points to my career. I firmly believe I'm being led by God and that God is giving me the wisdom. And secondly, I really had to marshal my ideas and my effort around a few scalar energy researchers. Again, Nikola Tesla was always predominant in my mind. Another scalar energy researcher by the name of Galen Hieronymus factors very much into my understanding of scalar energy. These two men, Tesla and Hieronymus, were, if you will, again, the forerunners. They were the trailblazers. In many ways, I've taken up where they have left off. So it's been a big help to me, Doctor. I didn't have to start from ground zero, so to speak. I started my research where Nikola Tesla and Galen Hieronymus left off. Now, everything I have done in the past 25 to 30 years has been independent research. Obviously, this is not taught at the university level. You have to go about this and discover on your own. What am I saying? My research is groundbreaking. I don't think anybody else in the world is doing what I am doing. It's different. And with that said, it's been a solitary march, if you will. Hopefully that will change. Hopefully other people will join me. But for the most part, it has been an endeavor on my part, separate from academia. Academia does not accept and embrace this energy. And I really had to rely upon, once again, a spiritual help and the I would say, the foothold that Tesla and Hieronymus established.
Yeah, I know what it's like being a naturopathic doctor and being really much on the outside of mainstream thinking and mainstream treatment practices. And I know about Hieronymus that he was considered kind of a pseudoscientist, and not that I believe in that terminology. I think the word conspiracy theory is just or where people put things when they're uncomfortable, that it's not mainstream thinking. So he invented, Hieronymus, he invented a machine, did he not?
Yes, exactly, and I'll expand upon that. I never met Galen Hieronymus. Again, Galen Hieronymus was one of the trailblazers with scalar energy research. He was born in 1895, and that was before my time. I did have the good fortune to meet his wife, Sarah Hieronymus, and she was an octogenarian by that time. And Sarah, a few years before she passed away, passed on to me many of the secrets that her husband had discovered. She essentially put me in a position that I could take over in some fashion where her husband left off. At that time, she was actually selling scalar energy instruments. They were crude instruments, but nevertheless, I purchased a scalar energy instrument from Sarah Hieronymus. And that's how I learned, from the ground floor up. But again, I had that push. I had that foothold that Galen Hieronymus had discovered and established. Hence, I did not have to start once again from ground zero. So in many ways, what I've learned from Sarah Hieronymus, who once again passed on many of the subtle mysteries, if you will, many of the secrets of scalar energy research, she simply just gave them to me. And to this day, I owe her a great deal of credit. She gave me the push, the necessary foothold to begin this research.
Wow. And so Hieronymus, he died in the late 80s, I believe.
That's correct.
So
that's correct.
Did she outlived him?
She outlived him. I actually met Sarah Hieronymus in 1993. And for a period of 4 years, I studied underneath her. And it was great. And she really more or less spilled the beans to me. She saw that I was interested. She saw that in some way I can continue on with her husband's work. And I told her I would do my best and to make this known to mankind. At that time, the Hieronymus couple was using the term eloptic energy. And what does that mean? Well, it's a coined word. E-L-O-P-T-I-C, eloptic energy. And Galen Hieronymus always considered that this eloptic energy, or scalar energy, it really was scalar energy that he was working with, he called it eloptic energy. It was really an amalgamation of electricity and optical energy. So he coined the word eloptic. In many ways, again, I would say that Hieronymus, what he has done is worthy of a Nobel Prize, but sadly he's been relegated to just a mere minor footprint in scientific inquiry. Well, someday that will change, and someday people will see what Galen Hieronymus and Nikola Tesla really had in mind. These two men were way ahead, centuries ahead of their time. They understood and developed scalar energy instruments from scratch, again, from ground zero. That's notable. I know how hard that is. I've been doing this all my life. You know, I go to my laboratory in the morning, so to speak, and there's nothing there. You just have to use your imagination and to build from that point. There is no starting point. So this is the essence behind groundbreaking research, behind discovery. And again, I attribute it to a spiritual calling. God has always helped me, and to the foothold that these two great researchers have allowed me to establish.
Okay, so this is the Eating for Meaning show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm the host, Dr. Millie, and I have a very special guest. He is a scalar energy researcher, one of perhaps maybe the only scalar research energy researcher right now. Are you currently the only one, or do you have colleagues?
There's a handful. There's a gentleman, Dr. Konstantin Mell out of Germany. I respect his work. There's a few other on the planet, but I would say you could probably count them on both hands. Those who are really into this on a full-time basis and who are really beyond the point, doctor, of theory. You know, you could theorize all you want. Eventually, you have to develop an instrument. You have to put it in practice. You know, I could talk about being, for instance, a great golfer, but until I go out on the golf course and prove that, I've not established anything. So you have to prove it. That's what I'm getting at. Talk and theory can only take you so far. You have to prove it. I prove it every day because I've developed functioning scalar energy instruments. I am able to control scalar energy. I don't know many people on the planet that have perfected the technique to the point that I have.
Okay, and we are going to ask you all about that. And if you have any questions, if you're listening and you want to ask a question of Tom Palladino, scalar energy researcher and practitioner, one of the only few in the world, please do call us at phone number 914-338-1887. That's 914-338-1887. Tom, I should have asked you if you're open to questions from the audience, if people
I
do call
am
in.
More than open. Of course, doctor.
Okay.
I want people to ask questions. I'm an open book.
Okay, great. And so this is phenomenal research happening right under our noses. And if you are keen or wise to this, then you will tune in. I'm just going to go to a commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to be asking Tom Palladino all about his scalar energy techniques. Tune in after the break.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
And we are back. And my name is Dr. Millie, and I'm the host of Eating for Meaning. And today we are talking about mind-blowing, groundbreaking energy research with Tom Palladino. And if you'd like to have your mind blown and want to ask him any questions, then I encourage you to keep listening and to call. The number is 914-338-1887. That's 914-338-1887. Back to you, Tom. So tell us, what is this instrument that allows you to capture scalar energy?
Okay, well, I'll start off with this. The Ark of the Covenant that's mentioned in the Bible was a scalar energy instrument. I'm convinced of that. The Ark of the Covenant was really the forerunner of my research. I have essentially the modern-day equivalent of the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant that Moses and the Israelites enjoyed was a scalar energy instrument. And if you understand the tradition behind the Ark of the Covenant, it produced an incredible amount of energy, and it was quite different from that of the electromagnetic dimension. Well, that's what I have. I have a scalar energy instrument that allows me to control physical nature. Scalar energy allows me to control the atomic and molecular structure And in so doing, essentially I have mastery over the physical universe.
Okay, so for those of you who do not know what the Ark of the Covenant is, that is an example of when, if people saw the Ten Commandments movie, or for people who know that the Ten Commandments were written by God on stone, it is the, you're saying it's the scalar energy that is was used in order to do this. Is that right?
Exactly. So, exactly. Thank you. So, and some of you have seen the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark. Well, they were looking for what? The Ark of the Covenant. Well, after this talk, after this one-hour talk, I'm going to show you why, according to the movie legend, why some people were so earnest to find the Ark of the Covenant. Well, in many ways, I have a functioning Ark of the Covenant. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, with my scalar energy instrument, I can control physical matter, as I've mentioned. So I've applied this to human health. I am able to take scalar energy and broadcast it into the human body. And one of the physical forms that I can create or assemble is vitamins. I do this routinely. I have a treatment program in which people will come to me and they will be asked, can you put me on a 30-day program? I do so. And in so doing, I'm able to assemble micronutrients inside their body. Well, how do I do that? Scalar energy allows me to assemble matter, in this case, vitamins. I'm also able to assemble antioxidants, phytochemicals, amino acids. Presently, I have the ability to assemble over 240 nutrients inside the human body. It's all done by way of light, by the light instructions of scalar energies. In practice, it works in a very simple fashion. Scalar energy tells the elements in the body, phosphorus, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon, to assemble in a molecular state, in a molecular structure. In specific, scalar energy will take the existing elements of the body and structure them into vitamins and minerals. Well, this is a new way of looking at the universe. Again, scalar energy is different from that of electricity. One of the features of scalar energy, it allows us to control matter. And I'm doing this to promote, to abet human health. I routinely, once again, am able to take scalar energy, broadcast that intelligence into the body, and in so doing, scalar energy will assemble micronutrients. That's just one of the fascinating features, one of the wonderments of scalar energy.
Okay, and I mean, to illustrate how, I have to say, far-fetched that is, not that I don't believe you, but how far-fetched it is, I mean, I'm an expert in phytonutrients and their sources and what the body does with plants when we eat them and the breakdown of vitamins and how we convert proteins into amino acids and all the what we would consider nutritional biochemistry. So anybody who's working with the kind of physical, biological, pathological to some extent, even immunological explanations of how things happen in the body and our relationship to food and our environment and how our body uses all those things. I mean, really, never is scalar energy, you know, even in alternative medicine study, ever mentioned as part of that process, nor is it ever conceived of that we could actually just create phytonutrients or antioxidants, at least not without the right sources.
Yes.
And certainly
exactly.
Not be able to control the breakdown of those foodstuffs once we actually consume them. I mean, so that's just something that's a wing and a prayer as far as we rely on biology and physiology and knowledge of biochemistry to even attempt to understand and to be able to control the effect of recommending, you know, somebody eat more salads in their day and then that they're going to actually benefit from the nutrition that they're consuming. And so, you know, for you to just to say that you can create these is, you know, it is very far-fetched and it's also astonishing and also mind-blowing, because one thing that I do, that I have always questioned, is the difference between life and death that very close together. Like as we get to the point where, you know, if a cell is dying and being regenerated, there is obviously some kind of energy or force, vital force in homeopathy or how whatever science or art you want to explain the world from. There's definitely something that we do not know. There's something big, like probably the most fundamental thing that we don't know that's occurring when we're considering life and death. And then, of course, every extension of that into health or disease and how the body chooses to go. So this is very fascinating to me. So continue on.
Sure. Okay, well, what else can I do with scalar energy? I've really focused my research on human health, and I've done it for the main reason I want to prove to the world that scalar energy is real, and I want to show the benefits. If I can prove that something is real, that this is just not science fiction, and secondly, I can show that it has application, that it is not only valid, but it can improve our lifestyle, then the world will eventually accept scalar energy, and essentially we will take off from there. Well, once again, scalar energy allows me to control the molecular, the atomic structure. And in so doing, I take scalar energy, and I'm able to reverse phase angle or send the energy necessary to break apart a molecule. In this case, I've developed a technique with my scalar energy instrument in which I can break apart germs. It's very easy for me to break apart fungi, viruses, bacteria, prions, protozoan. So what I'm saying is I've perfected a technique using my scalar energy instrument in which I can break apart disassembled germs that cause disease. Well, for instance, I recently treated somebody who had the herpes simplex virus. I treated them with my scalar energy instrument. And after I treated that individual, the individual has reported that they no longer have the symptoms of herpes simplex virus. Why? My scalar energy instrument broke apart, disassembled the herpes virus. Now, subsequent to my scalar energy treatments, this individual submitted to a DNA test. Some people call it a polymerase chain reaction test. It's a test that looks for the genetic material of a pathogen, such as the herpes simplex virus. Well, the test came back negative. The DNA test, the PCR test, came back not detected. The herpes simplex virus is not detected. Now, that doesn't surprise me because I've done this. It's routine anymore. I've done this tens of thousands of times. Scalar energy allows me to break apart germs, viruses, including the herpes simplex virus. And the tests are now substantiating what I've always theorized, what I've always considered. Scalar energy will break apart germs. Subsequent diagnostic testing after I treat people with scalar energy is once again confirming an absence of the germ, in this case, an absence of the herpes simplex virus. Well, what happened to it? Well, we changed the molecular structure of the herpes virus. We broke it down. It's no longer a functioning, viable virus. We've broken that herpes virus down into elements, into proteins, etc. It's almost as if you have a Lego set and you can dismantle a specific object or figure that you've created out of a Lego set. Well, that's very simplistic, but essentially that's what I'm doing. I take the bricks and mortar, so to speak, out of a germ, I disassemble a germ, and all you're left with are the separate bricks and the separate mortar. That's what I'm doing in the realm of pathogenic disease. I am able, with my scalar energy instrument, to routinely, easily, painlessly break apart a germ. In so doing, the germ no longer exists. Well, if I remove the germ, if I eradicate the germ, there is no disease. You can't become infected. Something doesn't exist anymore. The germ no longer exists. So what does that mean for mankind? Someday scalar energy will be used in a broad capacity someday scalar energy will serve to remove thousands upon thousands of germs, pathogens that infect people. And scalar energy will essentially herald the beginning of the end of pathogenic disease. Scalar energy will be used broadly to either prevent or cure pathogenic disease.
And so, Tom, are you a doctor?
I am not, no.
And so how exactly did you go from being studying energy to being able to understand what the human body needs in terms of just backing up in terms of understand what it needs in terms of nutrients or?
Good question. Everything that I've set out to do, although it's groundbreaking, I'm still following what I would consider protocol. In your case, doctor, standard protocol of nutritional science. What do I mean by that? Well, when I assemble nutrients in the body, I stick with the basics. I stick with the essential vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, phytochemicals, etc., that have been identified by nutritionists as being beneficial. And in so doing, I only treat for what is a product of nature, again, a vitamin, a phytochemical, amino acid, fatty acids. I'm only treating people for the same chemicals that they would find in fruits and vegetables. So I keep my research very simple, very pure. I believe I'm a purist at heart. I will never treat for anything besides what is a product of nature. So although the research is quite advanced, and although the research is quite groundbreaking, I'll admit to that, nevertheless, the application is common, doctor. I don't want to reinvent the wheel in that case. I only want to assemble the nutrients that have been designated as beneficial to the human body, micronutrients now, not macronutrients, micronutrients that are essential to health and that have been identified as being necessary for optimal physical and mental health.
So can you generate macronutrients, proteins, carbohydrates, fat?
Yes, I can. With scalar energy, we have mastery over the physical universe. If I wanted to, I could generate a macro nutrient. Yes. Do I do that? No. Why? Well, some people then have food sensitivities or food allergies related to proteins or starches, etc. So I stay away from that. I only stick at the micronutrient level, in which you're not going to have any type of food sensitivity. Everybody needs vitamins. Vitamins are a common denominator. There is no adverse effect by assembling a vitamin in the body.
Okay, so I do have a couple of questions. So one question is, it kind of brings to mind biofeedback, which is, I haven't seen your device, nor can I picture it, and I'm trying to, but biofeedback, which uses, I guess it is an electrocurrent, though, that can, it's actually evidence-based, that it can diagnose as well as treat certain imbalances in the body, hormonal imbalances, nutrient deficiencies, heavy metal toxicities, things like that. So how does it relate to, are you familiar with biofeedback and how does it, could you compare them?
Just vaguely. I'm going to try to compare the two. Any type of biofeedback, any other type of instrument or type of treatment modality that's using energy most likely is using electricity to either gauge or to administer some type of therapeutic event, which is fine. I use scalar energy exclusively, so in and of itself, my approach is different. I only use scalar energy. Now, there are many devices and many therapies out there that do indeed abet improve human health, and by all means, I encourage people, if it's going to help you and it's safe, by all means, do it. Can I make a direct comparison between my work and any other work with the electromagnetic spectrum? No, I really don't think there's a really clear comparison that we can make. Why? We're working with two different energies. Scalar energy is not electricity, and any other device that's using energy of the electromagnetic spectrum is working on a different dimension altogether. I'm not working in that dimension. I work exclusively in the scalar energy dimension.
And so with scalar energy, do you have to touch the patient?
No, that's the beauty of scalar energy. Scalar energy is non-physical. Secondly, scalar energy does not behave like electricity. When I want to treat somebody with scalar energy, all I need is their photograph. I treat everybody remotely. How can I do that? A photograph of a person is a source of scalar energy. If I took a photograph of myself, it would have embedded on that piece of paper my scalar energy resonance or my scalar energy harmonic. Well, with that in mind, all I need is a photograph of myself. I would place that photograph in my instrument, and my instrument then would broadcast energy to me. In similar fashion, you could use the analogy of a radio station and a portable radio. Obviously, there's no connection between a portable radio or a car radio and a satellite in outer space. Well, satellites are always sending signals to our radios, our TVs. Well, that's what I have in my instrument. Scalar energy performs a function of a satellite. Scalar energy can broadcast impulses in communication by way of the scalar energy spectrum. And all I need in order to do so is a photograph of a person. A photograph represents the receiving end of my scalar energy instrument.
Okay, so this brings to mind the work of medical intuitives like Carolyn Meese and even homeopaths from around the world who can treat people and channel remedies to people just by talking to them or just by looking at a picture, or some people claim just by thinking of them. So how does scalar energy or your device compare to medical intuitive work?
Sure. It does in a very profound way. First of all, let's use a few examples. Some people can lay hands upon you and you can be healed. Well, what is that principle? The animating force is scalar energy. Some people have healing hands, which are hands that propagate, that broadcast scalar energy. Some medical intuitives, I have understood, can look at a photograph and can decipher from a photograph what your ailment is. How do they do that? It's a scalar energy interpretation. A photograph represents you, the person, and they can ascertain your present state of health simply by this scalar energy interface that they're capable of. Some people say that prayer is healing. I believe it is. Well, why? A prayer is a broadcast of scalar energy. Anytime you pray, anytime you think, you're broadcasting intelligence. Well, what type of intelligence is that? It's scalar energy intelligence. The field of homeopathy. I don't think many people quite understand the animating principle behind a homeopathic remedy. How is it that you can dilute a homeopathic reagent, and with each dilution, it becomes stronger? Well, frankly, a homeopathic reagent is scalarized. It is scalar energy that allows you to use a homeopathic reagent to eradicate a disease or condition. For instance, if you're trying to eradicate a specific pathogen or a germ, and you can take a reagent that's representative of that pathogen, that germ, and then continually dilute that. Well, with each dilution, it seems that almost exponentially, you're increasing the potency of that reagent. Well, how does that work? Really, in effect, in principle, it's the reverse phase angle. A homeopathic reagent represents the scalar energy reverse phase angle, which will serve to do what? Which will serve to counter. It's anti-disease. It's anti-condition. So a homeopathic remedy really is scalar energy in motion. You know, finally, we're starting to understand these principles. That's the animating force. That's the oomph, so to speak, behind homeopathy. It's scalar energy in practice.
Yeah, the reason people can't understand homeopathy is because they are unwilling to understand vital force, which I guess is scalar energy. I mean, if chi is scalar energy, then vital force is scalar energy. And so Samuel Hahnemann was a scalar energy researcher as well, then, even though he was a chemist as opposed to an engineer like all these other scientists that you've mentioned.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Okay.
Well put.
Okay, thank you. So, So if you can generate vitamins and you can generate, for instance, really currently here in North America, we are facing some vitamin deficiency epidemics for various reasons, but one that's rather mysterious is vitamin D deficiency. And so what is your, there's two different types of vitamin D, so there could be some conflict, some unknowns between the active form of vitamin D3, which is usually measured, or the stored form, the inactive form of vitamin D2, which is in the kidneys. And so do you have anything to say about that, or am I asking the wrong question?
No, that's fine. My instrument is capable of assembling any type of vitamin, whether it's D2 or D3, it's all within its reach, so to speak. Now, why are we seeing deficiency? I don't know, frankly. Some people say it's not enough sunshine. Well, I'm sure it's much more than that. Most people today are energetic and they get outside. And I'm really not adept, and I really can't speak in length as to why people are having deficiency in vitamin D. Obviously, it's necessary for strong bones. It helps to help metabolize calcium from the diet, etc. Some people have said that vitamin D deficiency is associated with rickets and other, perhaps even with Lyme disease. I think there's evidence that points to that. But, to be blunt, we get into such a cause and effect relationship, and there's so many variables that I think we really have to put it on the microscope and look at each individual exclusively. What is your diet? What are your exercise habits? Why is it that your body, for some reason, cannot metabolize a specific vitamin or mineral, et cetera?
Okay. And then just work patient to patient.
That's what I consider. When I'm assembling nutrients inside the human body, I have accepted a list, if you will, of over 240 micronutrients that are recommended by nutritional science. I'm not going out of the boundaries. I don't consider myself a nutritionist, first of all. And when I'm assembling these nutrients, I am going by the textbook version, if you will. That is, what has been identified as being proper and beneficial to mankind, those are the vitamins, minerals, antioxidants that I am assembling inside the human body. They are all products of nature. I will never work with any man-made chemical. That's my promise to people. And I keep it clean, so to speak. Once again, I'm a purist at heart. I believe in healthful food. I don't believe in junk food.
And so is a healthy diet for your patients, is a necessary part of your work, or it doesn't matter at all because you can just generate the vitamins?
It doesn't matter at all. Scalar energy is fundamental. And regardless of your age, your diet, your medical condition, you will receive these nutrients at the cellular level. They will be created, assembled by way of scalar energy, regardless of your diet. Now, obviously, I want to throw this in. It's very important. Food is your medicine. Please eat well. Avoid junk food. I'll take it this far. Eat fruits and vegetables. You can't go wrong. Find the diet that works for you. I'm not going to give you nutritional advice. I can't. You really need to visit somebody who's qualified to do that.
Okay. So thank you for that. So, Tom, how do people make use of your services? Tell us about your programs. You have a pathogen cleanse, you mentioned, and you have a nutrient therapy program.
Right. I offer 30-day treatments. It's more or less just like a gym membership, if you will. I've broken it down into 30-day increments. You can start any day of the month you want. During the course of 30 days, you will receive daily treatments. and I have established a standardized protocol. Number one, it's a pathogen cleanse. I have the ability to disassemble more than 60,000 potential germs, pathogens. Number two, a nutrient program. I have the ability to assemble over 240 micronutrients. Number three, I have a chakra balancing. I've discovered my high energy instrument will balance in some way the chakras, the meridians of the body. So those three modalities I offer for a course of 30 days. My website is selfhealgo.com. If you're interested, visit the website. You can ask any question. We'll answer your question. I've written articles about scalar energy and my research. So if you really want to delve into this, I think my website might serve as a background for you to establish a greater understanding of my work and what scalar energy really means for mankind.
And so who can most benefit from your treatments?
Everybody. That's the beauty of it. I have these standardized treatments, and I took a long time, and I stepped back, and I said, how can I help everybody in the world? Well, number one, if I have the ability, doctor, to disassemble more than 60,000 pathogens in the human body, that's going to help everybody. If I have the ability to assemble micronutrients, nutrients that are accepted by nutritional science as being standard, as being essential, that's going to help everybody. Everybody needs minerals and amino acids. And third, if I have the ability to in some way to balance the chakras and to produce a state of calm and tranquility, well, those three treatments, those three modalities are standardized. It represents universal health care. Everybody in the world can benefit from those three modalities.
And so on your website, I see you mention you treat Lyme's disease, you treat Ebola, you treat fungus, psoriasis.
Yes. And with all sensational results. And why can I be so bold and to say that? Because on account of the fact I have control, I have mastery over germs. My scalar energy instruments allow me to control pathogens. You can't do that with electricity. Scalar energy allows me to get into the molecular geometry of any germ and to break apart, to send a reverse phase angle and to break apart a germ. Here's an analogy. I use this frequently. Many of you are familiar that some people can shatter a wine glass with their voice. There are some trained vocalists who have such a beautiful voice, such a resonant voice. They can sing, they can project the same resonating frequency into a glass, into a drinking glass, and that glass will shatter. Well, that's true. That's a valid scientific principle. It's known as the law of resonance. I do the same thing, but I do it with scalar energy. I project that same resonance, that same harmonic, back into a glass, and the glass shatters. It unbinds. It breaks apart. Well, if an opera singer can shatter glass with her voice, I can shatter a germ with my scalar energy instrument.
Now, some people think that they have, you know, they get live blood cell analysis. They think that they have parasites, or they're told they have parasites. But these parasites are very difficult to treat, even if those forms of measurement, are meaningful. It's very difficult to access and get into the cell and get into the blood cell and treat those types of microscopic parasites or bacterium or what have.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they don't really know what they are. Do you have to know what you're working with in order to treat it?
That's a great point. No. I have a collection. I have over 60,000 pathogens in my collection that I have identified. So when people submit their photograph to me, I treat everybody identically. Everybody has the same standardized treatments. And that's the beauty of what I'm doing. I don't diagnose with my instrument. I'm not there yet. I cannot diagnose. But what I can do is I can instruct my instrument to disassemble over 60,000 potential species of germs. And if you have a few of those germs, they will be disassembled. So what am I saying? I have almost like a shotgun approach. I have a universal approach in which I can treat out potentially over 60,000 species of germs.
Okay. I mean, it sounds
unbelievable. It sounds too good to be true. What do you,
I've heard that.
Say when people say that?
I've heard that frequently. And you know, and there it is sensational. And the only reason it's true, people, is because I am working with a different energy. Scalar energy is not electricity. Scalar energy behaves differently than that of electricity. Scalar energy gives us fundamental control over nature. You do not have this control with electricity or magnetism. Electricity and magnetism cannot control physical nature the way I can control physical nature with scalar energy. So my statement is this. Unless you're using a scalar energy instrument, you don't have fundamental control over physical nature or a germ, for that matter. A germ, a pathogen, is a physical constitution, obviously. I have that control. I have mastery over germs, over pathogens, and that's why it's true. And you can only say that, I can only make such a statement, if I had fundamental control. I'm in the driver's seat, so to speak, with scalar energy. I'm in a position of superiority. I am the master. I control the germ.
And so are there any, you know, sometimes if I'm treating somebody with candida, if I'm treating somebody with yeast, then they get yeast die-off and you have to detox the body and you have to make sure that there's no exacerbation, or you have to go very gently so that you don't force out the pathogen and force it into the bloodstream and make the person sit more sick temporarily. And the same thing goes for when dentists are removing mercury amalgams. I mean, there can be sickness generated, actually more serious sickness generated from removal of the amalgams than if they were to be left in. And so are there any potential harms to scalar energy treatment?
That's an excellent question. You're so astute, doctor. And this is the beauty of scalar energy. Let's take a fungus. A fungus has mycotoxins associated with it. When I disassemble a fungus, when I break down the actual organism, I also break down the mycotoxins associated with it. This is a consummate way of dealing with infection. So not only do I break up the germ, I also break up the toxins. Remember, scalar energy is non-physical. This is not a chemical reaction. So I transmute, I disassemble not only the fungus, but I also disassemble the toxins, the mycotoxins associated inside a fungus. Hence, there is no die-off. There is no Herxheimer reaction. I have caused the germ, the fungus, to cease to exist. I am also causing the toxins to cease to exist. I break down that molecular structure. They no longer exist. There is no die-off.
And then what about the immune system, the way that the body's been? So, for instance, an autoimmune disease or something, what I'm seeing in my practice is that people who get Epstein-Barr virus, they develop mono, they maybe develop chronic mono, maybe it's tied into some other environmental issues or some food sensitivities, and then they end up with antibodies and their immune system overreacting so that they get this kind of undiagnosable or maybe mixed form of autoimmune disease. Like, does it address things like that, autoimmune conditions, antibodies?
I think it does, and I really can't give you a clear cause and effect relationship. But let's define our terms and let's define the process. Scalar energy, once again, is fundamental. If I can break apart a germ, in many cases, the antibodies will no longer be so active. Why? The germ disappears. It no longer exists. Now, as we well know, when antibodies go into high gear and start attacking the body, our organs, our tissue, that leads to an autoimmune response. Well, the nice thing, obviously, about scalar energy, we break apart a germ. The germ no longer exists. Hence, we cannot have that overexpression, that autoimmune response, on account of the fact that the germ, the virus, the bacterium is no longer there. So with many people that I've treated, I've seen a gradual curtailment or a gradual attenuation, if you will, of autoimmune reactions. When you get rid of the pathogens, the antibodies, the T cells, are no longer releasing the necessary response because the germ, the virus, the bacterium, the fungus no longer exists. Well, the cause and effect is this. Remove the germ, eradicate the germ, and you will not have such a pronounced immune response. And many times you will not have the overexpression, which is leading to autoimmune disorder. In a nutshell,
right.
I've seen with some people, not everybody, I've seen with some people, after I treat out the pathogens, their autoimmune condition, their autoimmune disorder attenuates. It weakens, and with some people, it eventually reverses altogether.
Okay, well, this is fascinating stuff. Do you have a few more minutes? Are you going to stick around for a few minutes, or do you have to rush off?
I'll stay here as long as we can speak. I'll take a couple questions from the audience. We'll talk as long as can be.
Okay, so if you do want to call in and speak with Tom Palladino after this fascinating talk and presentation, the phone number to call is 914-338-1887. That's 914-338-1887. Again, if you want to call in and talk about your health condition or if you have any question at all about scalar energy and what it is and how Tom harnesses it to treat the body in all various ways, from eradicating viruses and bacteria to generating nutrients to metabolizing fat and other toxins. And so the number to call is 914-338-1887. And you are listening to Eating for Meaning with Dr. Millie. And my special guest today is scalar energy researcher Tom Palladino. Will be back after the break.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars-Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars-Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars-Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
And welcome back to the show. This is Dr. Millie, and this is the Eating for Meaning Hour on Blog Talk Radio. And I have a special guest today. His name is Tom Palladino, and his website is selfhealgo.com, three words, selfhealgo.com. And so, Tom, we've reached the end of the hour, and so I just want to give you an opportunity to give your contact information or any upcoming events you have or anything else. Do you want to leave us with some last words? Go right ahead.
Sure, by all means. I hope this talk has helped to solidify in your mind how friendly scalar energy is, how beneficial the energy is, and that it's everywhere. We're always using scalar energy, whether we realize it or not. Every time you think or pray, it's a broadcast of scalar energy. Your bodies are held together by scalar energy. Without scalar energy, your cells cannot function. Your body would have no geometry. Visit my website. It is selfhealgo.com. If you have any questions, please submit them to me. This is a promising, exciting field, people. You will see in your lifetime, scalar energy will serve to change the course of human history. If this is the first time you've heard this subject, if this is the first occasion that you've ever been introduced to scalar energy, it will not be the last. It's about to make it seen upon the horizon, if you will. Doctor, thank you for this opportunity. I enjoyed myself.
Thank you so much, Tom. I enjoyed myself as well. I learned a lot. I'm a believer, and I hope to be able to work with you in the future.
Please, let's do that.
Okay, so thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to everybody for tuning in, and thanks to my special guest, Tom Palladino. He is a groundbreaking researcher of vital force, chi, prana, source energy, what he calls scalar energy. It's an amazing explanation. And this is something that homeopaths work with without even knowing it. When you're a homeopath and you're using homeopathic medicine and you're learning how to use homeopathic medicine, the how does it work question is generally replaced with the I don't care because I know it works. And so my guest today, Tom Palladino, explained to some extent how it does work. We've got this alternate source of energy that is yet to be really regarded as the prime energy of the universe. Very interesting, very fascinating. And so this is Dr. Millie, and I'm your host of the Eating for Meaning show on blogtalkradio.com. And if you like what you're hearing, please do click follow on my homepage and follow me along every Thursday at 12 noon. Between 12 and 1:30, we cover all sorts of exciting topics, and generally I do have guests, and I probe them about their lifestyle and their eating habits, and I actually missed that one today because I was so engrossed in my guest conversation. But we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the food for mood diet and how we can maximize the way we feel and the way we think and the way our mood behaves, if our mood's behaving for us or against us. This is eatingformeaning.com. Join me back after the break.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
And welcome back to the show. This is Dr. Millie. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I'm a certified nutrition specialist, and I have my master's in public health, and I'm the host of Eating for Meaning. Eating for Meaning is a year-long nutrition program that I developed in order to help you change your relationship to food. So whether you are attending Overeaters Anonymous, or whether you have diabetes, or whether you just feel like your clothes don't fit anymore, or you just feel blah in your body, then Eating for Meaning is a nutrition program to help you approach food differently, because the word diet has come to mean a fad occurrence, something that we do short term to help give us a quick fix, to change our metabolism in the short term without really paying attention to the long term effects and how that changes our metabolism. And so it's not only about body, however, because when we eat, it's not just about restricting calories and becoming thin. It has a lot to do with our mental state and our mental outlook. So every time we eat, we introduce blood sugar into our system. Our brain is the only organ of the body that relies on glucose, that's as sugar, in order to sustain itself. Every time you think a thought, every time you read something, every time you write your name or sign your name or pick up your phone, you're always using glucose. You're using energy calories, chemical energy, in the form of food calories in order to function. It's your brain, not your stomach, that is first affected by food. Here in our culture, we become so attached to the concept of being full as something, a feeling, a sensation that's coming from our stomach. If our stomach growls, if our stomach feels empty, we notice that we're hungry. If our stomach doesn't growl, and that's fine. If we have normal, if we have normal hunger signals and our stomach growls every 3 to 4 hours or when it's mealtime, then that's an appropriate response. But what about for people whose stomach does not growl appropriately? What if you've been training yourself to not experience hunger signals, or if you've been bypassing your stomach's hunger signals, what happens? Is your stomach stops telling you that it's hungry? And so what other mechanism do we have to identify that we're hungry as opposed to our stomach? Well, actually, it's our brain that is the first hungry, and it's also our brain that's the first full because of our brain's relationship to sugar. Whereas when you eat a meal, it takes 20 minutes, no matter how fast you're eating, no matter what kind of food you're eating, it takes 20 minutes for our signals to go from our stomach, our digestive tract, to our brain to tell us that we're full. That's the long route. That's the long route. Every time you eat a meal, when your stomach gets filled with food, and then the stomach starts going into the intestines, and then there's hormone signals that it tell the brain. So a hormone called leptin signals to our hypothalamus in the back of our brain that we are full. And that takes about 20 minutes. Whereas once we start eating, the blood sugar starts getting into our, the sugar starts getting into our blood. That only takes about 10 minutes. And then within a minute, then our brain starts to notice that we're receiving energy. So whereas it takes 20 minutes for our stomach to start to feel full, it only takes our brain 10 minutes or 11 minutes to feel the effects of sugar in the system and start to feel normal again and start to feel energized again and start to feel calm again. Every single time you eat is an opportunity to give nutrition and nourish your brain. And now the brain uses sugar, but does that mean that the brain likes white sugar, or does that mean that the brain likes soda, or does that mean the brain likes to have fast food or a 3,000-calorie meal as opposed to a 1,200-calorie meal? No, because actually too much sugar is toxic. It's not only toxic for our brain, it's toxic for our eyes, it's toxic for our kidneys, it's toxic for all of our nerve cells, and the body does not tolerate having high levels of sugar in the blood. So if you were to eat a diet just carbohydrates or just candy or just danishes and pastry and coffee with sugar, then what would happen would be that your insulin, your pancreas, would stimulate insulin to go in and take that sugar out of your blood and store it as fat. So for people who are eating a high sugar diet, this is what's happening all the time. Every time they eat, their body's stimulating insulin to go in and take that sugar out of the blood and store it as fat. Not only is this leading to weight gain, but it also leads to fatigue. Not only does this lead to fatigue, it robs the brain from having a stable amount of sugar by which it has to function. So what does the brain prefer? The brain prefers smaller meals. The brain prefers carbohydrate calories, sugar calories, to be buffered by fats, good fats, and proteins, so that when our digestion is happening, the brain gets a little bit of sugar over a long period of time. So digestion is taking 2 to 3 hours to take place as opposed to just taking 1 hour to take place. As the brain utilizes calories at a slower pace and uses fewer calories over a longer period of time, our body is also not stimulating insulin to such a degree, not being triggered to go in and get the sugar and store it as fat because it has a lower level of sugar in there in the first place. The digestion of fats and proteins takes a lot longer than the digestion of carbohydrates. And so when we're what we call buffering our carbohydrate calories with our proteins and fats, this whole process takes longer. So it actually means that you're full longer, your brain is energized and able to think and focus for a longer period of time, and you're not developing diabetes by having high sugar spikes.
You're not developing hypoglycemia by having sugar troughs or withdrawals from sugar, sugar crashes. And also, your body's not having to go and store the extra sugar calories as fat because it's never triggered the insulin in the first place. And this is a diet, this is the premise of a diet I developed about 7 years ago called the Food for Mood Diet. And it's a way to retrain our ourselves so that our brain is benefiting from the food that we're eating instead of relying on our cravings and the feeling of the food on the tongue or the feeling of our full stomach in order to trigger our fullness and hunger reflexes. So instead of paying attention just to what our stomach is doing, we're actually starting to pay attention to what our brain's doing and how our brain feels as a way to stimulate and trigger us to eat properly. So did you know that as I was researching this field, what I discovered was that symptoms of high blood sugar and symptoms of low blood sugar actually overlapped with mood symptoms. And so some symptoms of high blood sugar or hyperglycemia, when there was too much sugar in the blood, includes difficulty concentrating, headaches, fatigue, maybe tingling feet, hair loss, decreased vision, constipation, upset stomach, maybe diarrhea. These are symptoms of high blood sugar, also increased thirst and dry mouth. Now, some of these symptoms overlap with symptoms of anxiety. When we get anxious, when we get panicked, we also have increased thirst. We have an increased dry mouth. We have a hard time concentrating. We might get headaches, double vision, not be able to trust what we're seeing. We might feel very tired. We might experience extra tingling or numbness in different areas of our body. Our vision might get blurred, and we might have a bowel movement. We might have some IBS-like symptoms. And so what I was noticing in my practice when I was practicing at a mood disorder clinic in Toronto, the mood disorder clinic I was practicing at was called the START Clinic for Mood and Anxiety Disorders. And at that clinic, all we did was see patients who had mood disorders ranging from major depression, traumatic stress disorder, bipolar conditions, hypomania conditions, anxiety, general anxiety disorder, social anxiety disorder, so various depression and anxiety and panic disorders. And I was asked at that time to develop a diet to give to these patients, and that's when I started researching the correlation between high levels of blood sugar and mood disorders, and then also low levels of blood sugar when we've gone too long without eating, when we've been hungry for too long, when our brain has actually been starved of sugar and nutrition and we're unable to function. And at that time, we can experience tremor and shakiness. We can start to sweat. We can feel dizzy or lightheaded. We can feel irritability or fatigue. We can also be confused and unable to complete routine tasks. We might have nightmares. We might have excessive weakness and unable to exercise or to go to school or to go to work. We might have difficulty speaking. We can't find our words. These are symptoms of hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. You don't have to have diabetes in order to experience high blood sugar and low blood sugar. In fact, you could be developing diabetes for 10 to 30 years and in the meantime suffering from depression, suffering from weight gain, suffering from anxiety, and suffering from different symptoms that overlap with symptoms that are related to blood sugar symptoms. And so that's why I developed the Food for Mood Diet, to help people address their anxiety disorders and to be able to understand when the symptoms that they're feeling is actually food-related. Are you actually anxious or are you just hungry? And when I started to realize this and started to research it, I looked into research and looked at, for instance, studies that said that somebody who goes to work and gets in a car or gets on a subway without having eaten breakfast is 3 times more likely to have a panic attack on the way to work, to experience road rage in the car, or to have a panic attack on the subway than somebody who's eaten breakfast. And this is because there's no fuel available for the brain. The brain cannot focus. The brain is suffering from hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. What's more, we know that it's food and proteins and carbohydrates, amino acids, and different micronutrients that are responsible for making our brain chemistry, our serotonin, the brain neurotransmitter, the brain hormone that tells us that we're well, that tells us that everything's okay, or dopamine, the brain chemical that tells us that we're happy and allows us to laugh and experience joy. The cofactors, the precursors to these hormones, are actually food nutrients. And there's a whole list of food nutrients that we need in order to make these nutrients in the brain. So if somebody tells you that you have a chemical imbalance, or if you go to the doctor and they tell you you don't have enough serotonin, then the first thing I do for my patients is I look to see what they're eating, to see if the foods that they're eating have enough protein, have enough B vitamins, have enough zinc, have enough iron, have enough magnesium. If their stomach acid is working properly to break down the proteins, and then they're able to generate precursors to serotonin like L-tryptophan or 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan, our body actually has to be working properly and receiving the proper food nutrients in order for us to generate serotonin. It doesn't just magically appear. If we're not eating these foods, or eating sources of these vitamins, then we're not going to be able to generate serotonin. Likewise, we're not going to be able to generate melatonin from serotonin, because serotonin is converted with the help of an amino acid called SAMe and a vitamin B5 to produce melatonin, which is a sleep hormone. And if we're unable to produce melatonin, we're unable to have a regular sleep pattern, and then the next day we're more likely to have blood sugar regulation, stress, high cortisol, and less likely to produce the serotonin that we need the following day. What's more, we're more likely to develop improper eating habits. One thing I definitely noticed when I was working at the START clinic for mood and anxiety disorders, I noticed that patients with mood and anxiety disorders, anxiety and depression, did not eat properly. And many times these people blamed their depression for reasons for why they did not eat properly. They blamed their anxiety, they blamed their depression, they blamed their inability to get out of bed. But if I look at it from the other's point of view, not eating is actually contributing towards more depression, because when we're not eating, we're causing all these blood sugar disturbances, we're causing all these neurotransmitter and chemical imbalances in the brain, and this is something that your doctor will never, ever tell you. And we know that there's certain key nutrients that are needed in order to generate these neurotransmitters to make us feel well. And it's not just about what we eat, it's also about when we eat. It's also eating frequently enough so that we can regulate our energy levels and our focus and our attention and our alertness and the sense of well-being that we have by having enough sugar available in our brain so that our brain can function. Many times people will be working away at work and skipping lunch and all of a sudden experience either a lot of anxiety or a lot of fatigue or the need to go home or they'll feel sick, and this could just be due to hunger. So the Food for Mood diet is originally started off as 9 principles and principles to follow in order to make your brain feel well, in order to balance your mood with your food. But now it's actually, I've broken it down even further into 13 different principles. And I'm going to touch on a few of them. I'm not sure that I'll have time to do all of them before we go to break, but this is an introduction to the Food for Mood diet. And the first point in the Food for Mood diet is to pay attention to your hunger in relation to your mood. So within 10 minutes of eating, your mood is affected by what you eat, or what you don't eat if you're not eating. As soon as you start to notice your mood depreciating, your energy waning, then this is a time to think about when you last ate, so that you're doing some self-help. You're going back in your mind and you're remembering, when did I last eat? When did I last drink water? So that you can improve your situation immediately. Immediately you can feel better within 10 minutes. Number two, dehydration is debilitating. Studies show that drinking water throughout the day helps us feel more energized. A study from France just published last year showed that people who drink more quantities of water throughout the workday have improved mood, they have improved focus, and they have improved energy. And let me make a caveat. Juice, coffee, soda, alcohol, and soda water, or what we say here in New York, seltzer, do not count. It's water that we're talking about. Now, maybe you squeeze some lemon in it, you put some coconut water in there, you have some cucumber in your water, or maybe some herbal teas, but water, pure water, is the most important thing. Number three, eat breakfast within an hour of waking, because when you wake up in the morning, you have not been eating for a period of 6 to 8 to 12 hours. Some people don't eat past 6 o'clock, and so if they wake up at 6 o'clock, they haven't eaten in 12 hours. And so your blood sugar is low when you wake up in the morning. In order to set your metabolism for the day, in order to give yourself the energy that you need in order to start your day, you need breakfast. And if you don't, then the lack of fuel that you have will aggravate you. And you'll be functioning on an energy deficit and be irritable, likely the rest of the day. More likely to experience cravings later on, more likely to be unable to complete all your daily activities. And I will also say that you should include protein with your breakfast, so either an egg or an all-natural nut butters, or even poor man's breakfast is to have some sardines there or some fish. And so protein is excellent to eat in the morning, not just carbs, not just Special K and orange juice and skim milk, my least favorite breakfast, touted as healthy, which is not, has no protein. Number four, mitigate your stress by eating regularly, eating through every 3 to 4 hours. Your brain needs to experience a new influx of blood sugar every 3 to 4 hours. Consider that your body is like a furnace and you need to stoke it. You need to stoke that furnace. You need to put another log in there. Your body needs fuel in order to burn energy, in order to generate energy. We need chemical energy from food in order to generate our own body's energy, called ATP, chemical energy. This is a biochemical process. If we're skipping meals, you're making a big mistake. It's not actually the fewer meals you eat that leads to well-being and weight loss. It's actually the more you ate. The more you eat, the better your digestive system communicates with the brain, the more in touch they are, the better their relationship, the better you function, the better you feel, and also the thinner you are. People who eat more often tend to be thinner and have better bacteria in their digestive system than people who are overweight. And so this is Eating for Meaning, and we have had an amazing show today. I want to thank my guest, Tom Palladino. He is an inventor, brilliant ideas, brilliant phenomenon, start with a concept. And so Tom Palladino has the concept that scalar energy is something that heals him, and he has done just that, developed a tool to measure scalar, it doesn't measure quantitatively, but it harnesses scalar energy and delivers it so that he can make nutrients and heal the body. And so he's been a great guest, and I want to thank you so much for tuning in. If you like what you hear, then please do follow along on blogtalkradio.com. This is Eating for Meaning with Dr. Millie. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I am a master's of public health, and I also am a certified nutrition specialist. This show will be transferring over to Web TV in the coming weeks, and so I want to ask you to stay posted and stay in tune and share the show. If you like what you hear, please do share the show. It's been my pleasure being here, and I want to once again thank my brilliant guest who's talking about a new energy phenomenon, scalar energy, That's Tom Palladino. And if you like what you heard from him, then go to his website called selfhealgo.com. Join me back next week, Thursday at noon. I'll have another amazing guest for you.